session, Judge Flory, Judge Werke, Judge Cochran, the Honorable James B. Flory presiding.
Morning and welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. Please be seated. All right, our first case on the calendar this morning is A18-1982 ALG Relator versus the Minnesota Department of Health. I'm sure you're both familiar with our rules. You both will have 15 minutes for your principal arguments, and Relator will have 5 minutes for rebuttal. There's a switch on the front of the podium there where you can adjust it to your comfort. And with that, we'll begin. Relator, you may begin when you're ready. Oh, and please identify yourselves for the record when you begin your arguments, please.
I'm sorry, Your Honor, you said to flip what switch?
I think there's a switch right in front of you there down below if you want to raise or lower the podium.
Oh, I think this
otherwise, is session, we've got the, well, okay. We've got the timing controlled.
Your Honor, good morning.
Good morning.
Your Honors, Alex DeMarco, appearing on behalf of Relator Andrea Lynn Gillen, or ALG. May it please the court, counsel. Your Honor, we're here, as the court knows, from an appeal from an administrative denial of reconsideration for the disqualification of Ms. Gillen from her previous capacity as a nurse with the Ritchie Eye Clinic, specifically in the surgery unit, Your Honor. It is, I believe, factually known that that surgical clinic, the Ritchie Eye Clinic, is licensed by the Minnesota Department of Health, Your Honor. As the briefs make clear, the case involves a criminal offense from some time ago. The realtor entered a guilty plea specifically to criminal sexual conduct in the fourth degree under Minnesota Statute 609.345 Subdivision H, Your Honor. As reading the Minnesota statutes and going back in the history of it, should note that, to be specific, while she was initially charged with having sexual relations with a vulnerable adult in a patient setting, the charge she ultimately pled to is an unusual one that doesn't involve finding a vulnerability, but involves a sexual relationship between, strangely, a psychotherapist and patient. While it's not clear that...
Dispute, counsel, that the charge she was convicted of falls under the permanent disqualification provisions of the statute?
Your Honor, I did have read over the statute, and as I raised a lot more issues in my notice of appeal than I did in briefing, Your Honor, the court probably noticed that. I apologize, I'm so used to talking to one judge at a time. The court probably noticed that, and part of that was in my research, I did find that the statute did contemplate permanent disqualification under the plea to that subdivision. So that is the best of what I could find. I did actually spend some time over here trying to reach back to the statutes as they appeared at that time, and as best I could gather, that is what I determined, Your Honor.
Counsel, the disqualification notice from the reconsideration notice from the Department of Health notes that your client was convicted of felony criminal sexual conduct in the fourth degree. Do you dispute that?
Your Honor, I do not dispute that she was convicted. It was and that there was a stay of imposition whereupon later that was dropped down to a misdemeanor on her record. But it is not in dispute that she indeed pled guilty to felony criminal sexual conduct in the fourth degree.
Thank you,
Your Honor. The only reason I bring that up is I would note respondent's brief. Numerous times, respondent references vulnerable adults. I would refer to court in particular to page 12 of respondent's brief. stating that through the Background Studies Act, the Minnesota legislature has determined there exists a strong correlation between an individual who's committed criminal sexual conduct and the potential risk to cause harm to vulnerable adults. Accordingly, Minnesota statutes require a realtor to be permanently disqualified from having access to vulnerable adults, and there is nothing under the Background Studies Act that prevents MDH from disqualifying realtor. It goes on to say, it cites Williams v. Commissioner of Minnesota Department of Health, and in parentheses notes, and quoting the case, the legislature has apparently determined that individuals who have committed certain offenses should not be allowed to have direct contact with certain vulnerable patients. Your Honor, the concern regarding and the legitimate government interest, I guess, that's part of the overall due process argument here on 16 and 17, again, too, is referred to that contact with vulnerable adults. I just think it's important for the factual consideration of the court that where she was assigned to work, where she was working as a nurse in the
surgical. Obviously, you're taking issue with the context of the employment that she had, that there perceivably is no vulnerable adult there. But isn't that a legislative pitch that you'd have to make, that we'd have to start parsing out places of employment in which there would or would not be a potential vulnerable adult?
I'm simply using the language that appears in the case law and in the brief.
But I guess our problem is this. You're acknowledging, you've indicated that this was a disqualifying event, and we have legislation that specifically says if you have this event as a part of your record, you cannot work in X number of fields. I don't know that we can change that. It sounds to me like it's more of a legislative action.
Understood, Your Honor. I was simply noting, and Your Honor does note that obviously patients coming through to receive services at the Richie Eye Clinic in the surgery unit, there isn't a determine, that doesn't determine whether those persons are vulnerable adults or whether or not there could be vulnerable adults receiving that surgery, and people, most of whom are not vulnerable adults, receiving that surgery.
But how is that even relevant, counsel? I mean, isn't the disqualification from working in state-licensed facilities or facilities that need to be licensed by the Department of Health or the Department of Human Services? I don't see where the vulnerability issue even comes into play if I look at what the statute says.
Well, that's a good segue into the broader issue at hand, Your Honor. I was simply noting that seemed to be a particular issue in respondents' brief, and this is the first that we're addressing our respective briefs before the court. Your Honor, to the larger issue then, my concern is that Ms. Gillen worked tirelessly and diligently through a process to become reinstated as a nurse. Did 2,000 hours under the supervision of another nurse.
I don't think we...
She was
reinstated. As a panel, I think we were well aware of, and we appreciate the fact that your client has worked diligently in order to comply with everything expected of her. What I'm hearing you argue is that the consequences are very harsh as they are applied to her because of what she's done in terms of rehabilitating herself. But with that said, one of your arguments on the equitable principles poses the reality that she entered into the stipulation and then followed through with everything she needed to do. What I want to question you about is the very real situation where she could still practice as a nurse and not deal with a vulnerable population as described. Aren't there other opportunities that are still there?
Well, that's simply where I was going, and in contrast to what Honorable Judge Flory said, yes, there are definitely places where you can work as a nurse and not work with vulnerable adults, but as
she could
Sonner
be a
noted,
consultant, she can write a book. There's a myriad of things that someone with a nursing degree or a nursing license you can do. You can hold yourself out as a nurse and...
So
you have to be a little creative, but there are things you could come up with.
Not really, because we're in a state, it's a heavily medically regulated state, and so respondent makes the point that, well, she could still practice as a nurse in facilities that are not licensed by MDH. I actually did look into this, and I could not find a clinic that isn't licensed by MDH. Indeed, to even own a tattoo parlor, you need a license from the Minnesota Department of Health. And so it doesn't seem to me, it seems to me kind of an argument of absurdity that, oh, you can be a nurse, you just can't do it anywhere where the Minnesota Department of Health regulates the industry that you're in.
So what's counsel? Wrong with that, counsel? I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
I mean, I understand your argument completely in that regard, but this is what the legislature has mandated. It's not permissive language. It's mandatory permanent disqualification language. As Judge Werke says, it's a harsh result, but it's a legislatively harsh result. What's wrong with it? Why is it, I mean, how under what grounds can we ignore the clear mandate of the legislature?
Well, under two principles, Your Honor. I do believe that some promises were made by a state agency, and the state is the state, and these two agencies do communicate with one another, and they're required to per these statutes. And it seems that some promises were made that she could return.
But that means that you're inferring that the stipulation and consent order for reinstatement, that it binds the department because she signed with a different agency? The nursing board clearly is a different governmental unit.
I am so representing. I know it's a stretch, but I am so representing that I believe that
what case law do you have to support that a nursing board can bind bind another agency? The other agency wasn't a part of the stipulation. I mean, we have the stipulation. We can see that.
Right. Your Honor, I am holding that because in some of the case law I've cited that I believe that agreement and stipulation with the Board of Nursing is a representation by the state of Minnesota.
But does the stipulation say anything about practicing in an MDH licensed facility?
It does not specifically talk about the practice in an MDH licensed facility either. Pro or con that, Your Honor.
And at the time your client entered into the stipulation, I went back and did some research, and at that time, criminal sexual conduct in the fourth degree was a disqualifying crime under the disqualification statute. So wasn't your client on notice at the time of entering into the stipulation that was a disqualifying crime?
Your Honor, I think that's exactly my point. I believe that these numerous stipulations that are entered into with the Board of Nursing that also predated and informed her plea agreement which she also worked with after that plea through the program.
But she was represented by counsel, correct?
She was.
And the law provided at the time that criminal sexual conduct in the fourth degree was a disqualifying event. There's nothing in the stipulation that says that she's going to be exempt from this law in any way. So, and there's nothing that says she'd be able to work in an MDH licensed facility. So on what basis is there to conclude that she was led to believe that she would be able to do so?
I would note for the court, and this was, I realize, didn't make it into my materials because it was discovered afterwards, but when, and I do appreciate the courtesy of the court of allowing a person to turn in some materials late who appears before the Court of Appeals maybe once every 3 years. But, Your Honor, it should be noted that there was a process begun with an administrative law judge at the Department of Human Services in 2006, and that memo indicated that would be continued indefinitely until the criminal matter was resolved, and that either party could reinitiate proceedings after that, and if it wasn't done by 2007, the court could initiate it sua sponte. It appears that nothing happened in regards to that. So there was already an open file with the Minnesota Department of Human Services for an administrative hearing at which she did appear with counsel, and he determined that it would be best to indefinitely continue it until the criminal matter was resolved. Nothing followed from that. So it's sort of an unfinished process that represents my client, therefore being involved in that entire process, never heard a follow-up from the court on that, proceeded to work with the Board of Nursing, and I believe that she I believe that she honestly and in good faith relied upon that as, all right, in order to keep working in my beloved profession, these are the things that I need to do.
But there wasn't any, there isn't any evidence in the record that the Board of Nursing told her that she'd be able to work at an MDH licensed facility.
That's a correct statement, Your Honor.
Does she have an unconditional license now to practice registered nursing or practical nursing?
Say again?
Does she have an unconditional license now? I mean, those all
yes.
those conditions pursuant to the stipulation were removed. So how is she mis? Where was the misrepresentation from your point of view? If her license is unconditional now, which is what the stipulation told her it would be, and the restriction is where she can work with it, not whether she has an unconditional license.
Your Honor, it's accurate that she's been fully restored to as a licensed nurse and doesn't have to submit those reports and go through those things anymore. She's also been discharged from probation, and she's also not having to register as an offender anymore.
So where was the misrepresentation in the stipulation then?
Your Honor, again, I'm asking the court to consider it practically that working as a licensed nurse, actually working, not simply being an author or that, but practicing nursing, I don't know where she could practice that isn't a Minnesota Department of Health licensed facility. That is where nurses work. I suppose.
Well, nurses don't always work in that facility. We're out of time. But let me pose to you, you can answer in your rebuttal. You know, you're a lawyer. You could hire her as your nurse consultant for your personal injury cases. I mean, there are things that can be done, but I guess that's not a question, just a remark.
Understood. All right. Thank you.
You will have 5 minutes for rebuttal, Mr. DeMarco, if you wish to use that.
And very good, Your Honor.
Counsel for respondents done.
Thank you.
You may proceed when you're ready, Counsel.
Thank you. Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Lindsay Strauss, and I'm with the Minnesota Attorney General's Office, and I'm here today representing the Minnesota Department of Health. The issue before this court is whether MDH properly denied Relator's request for reconsideration of her disqualification from providing direct care services to vulnerable adults because the information used to disqualify her was correct, and MDH was prohibited from setting aside her disqualification. MDH's decision should be upheld because it is supported by the evidence, it's not arbitrary or capricious, and it was a reasonable decision. As Relator has already admitted and this court has noted, Relator's conviction in this case permanently disqualifies her. The Background Studies Act is clear, the law is clear, that based upon Relator's misdemeanor criminal conviction for criminal sexual conduct in the fourth degree, she is permanently disqualified. In his brief and in his argument, Relator has raised several claims regarding whether or not Relator is able to continue working as a nurse. Again, as this court has noted already, the legislature has decided through the Background Studies Act that certain individuals should not be allowed to work with vulnerable adults in state licensed facilities. In this case, Relator entered into an agreement with the nursing board. She did not enter into agreement with MDH. MDH was not a party to that agreement. And
the Relator is arguing and proposing to us that we consider them to be one and the same and have that one arm binds the other.
Yes, Your Honor. And as this court previously questioned Relator's counsel whether or not he had case law to support that claim, he did not cite any in his brief and did not provide any to the court. And as the court is aware, the nurse and is cited in the respondent's brief, the nursing board and MDH are separate governmental aided
agencies.
Is this
something that, had you been invited to participate in that stipulation, that the agency would have?
Your Honor, I cannot imagine a situation where MDH would be invited in that situation. The nursing board is a self-regulated entity. The legislature gave it the power and the authority to regulate nurses and the issuance of nursing licenses. MDH has a broader mandate. Part of that mandate is to protect individuals in its licensed facilities. Therefore, the Background Studies Act is broader, and as this court has noted, perhaps it does have some harsh results, but that is because MDH has the authority through the legislature to protect vulnerable adults in these facilities.
Counsel, in your brief, you argue that Relator has other employment opportunities in non-licensed MDH facilities. Can you give us some examples of what those would be?
Yes, Your Honor. in his argument, Relator's counsel noted that he was unable to find any clinics that were not licensed by MDH. I find that difficult to support. I can represent that MDH does not represent clinics. For example, DaVita dialysis clinics are not regulated
by... You mean does not license?
Does not license, yes, Your Honor. Does not license clinics. They do not license school nurses. They do not license, again, as the court has noted,
Those other facilities require a background check, though?
If they're not a state-licensed facility, I do not believe they require a Background Study Act. I cannot speak to that.
Would a school, though?
I would have to refer the court to the Background Studies Act, but I think it refers to DHS, MDH, some DOC, and perhaps some other entities.
Okay, thank you.
But I'm not entirely sure.
I'm sorry, I interrupted you. So there are certain clinics, like dialysis clinics, schools,
yes.
Any other examples?
I think, as this court has noted in previous cases, in Sweet versus Commissioner of Human Services, in Obara, that individuals can work in the private sector.
Weight loss clinics.
You know, the list is definitely not exhaustive,
So what you are suggesting is that although we call this perhaps a harsh legislative remedy, that there are other, she's not shut out from any opportunity. There are things that could be sought.
That is correct, Your Honor. And this court has acknowledged that the disqualification statute prevents individuals from working in state-licensed facilities. It does not stop them from working in the private sector. And that is exactly what is the case here. So MDH has not done anything to completely bar Relator from pursuing her nursing license or obtaining her nursing license. It only has correctly applied the Background Studies Act and disqualified her from working in state-licensed facilities. Additionally, the legislature, through the Background Studies Act, has clearly articulated that there is a strong correlation between an individual who has committed criminal sexual conduct and a potential risk to vulnerable adults. In fact, in this case, Relator's criminal actions are exactly the behavior and the harm that the legislature has thought to prevent through the Background Studies Act. Relator pled guilty and was convicted of having a sexual relationship with a mentally ill, vulnerable adult who had been civilly committed, while Relator had worked as a charge nurse and the individual was under her care. She pled guilty, and however, she now, in her briefs, seeks to minimize the conduct that occurred between her and the vulnerable adult. Because Relator has failed to demonstrate that MDH is barred from disqualifying her and indeed has not effectively prevented her from seeking her nursing license or working as a nurse, MDH's decision should be affirmed. Additionally, it's clear that MDH provided Relator with due process. This court has repeatedly held the Background Studies Act provides sufficient procedural due process to individuals who have been disqualified based on a criminal conviction. Specifically, I would respectfully refer the court to Obara versus the Minnesota Department of Health and Charles versus Commissioner of Human Services. Both of these cases involved a procedural due process challenge to the Background Studies Act brought by a nurse in which the court held that the nurse had no right to an administrative hearing because they had been disqualified based upon a criminal conviction. The Background Studies Act is clear that an individual who seeks to work with vulnerable adults in state-licensed facilities must be disqualified if they've been convicted of criminal sexual conduct in the fourth degree. Here, it was Relator's burden to show that MDH's decision not to rescind or set aside her disqualification based on her conviction was unreasonable, contrary to law, or not supported by the evidence, and she has failed to do so. MDH, therefore, respectfully requests that the court affirms MDH's decision. If the court has no further questions, the department rests on its papers.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Strauss. Mr. DeMarco, you have 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Briefly, Your Honor. Your Honor, as the department just noted, as the Attorney General's office just noted, about these being separate agencies, and she touched on the due process argument. I did want to refer to the court, page 10 of my brief. Minnesota Statute 148.267 does require the Department of Health to notify the Board of Nursing within 30 days if it is apprised of, quote, an adverse healthcare event, unquote. It does appear that a process was begun in 2006 before her conviction, and that that process was to be resurrected on the other side of that conviction, and never was. It doesn't appear that during her working with the Board of Nursing, there was any communication from the Department of Health, who clearly, because there's an order for continuance of 2006, it doesn't appear that Department of Health worked with the Board of Nursing or communicated with them, hey, just so you know, this is something that you should be aware of before the process of reinstating her license. That statute does seem to make it seem it's kind of a collaborative effort between the two agencies.
Go ahead.
Counsel, if your client has opportunities to work in the private sector and at other non-licensed other facilities that are not licensed by MDH. So what is the error then in terms of I'm not clear how what the department didn't do that you're saying it should have done, given that there are the actions of the Board of Nursing go to licensing and the actions of the department go to licensing of nurses and the actions of the department go to ensuring that persons who are working at department licensed facilities don't have a disqualification.
Your Honor, I understand what you say. Two things. In terms of whether it's a licensed facility or a private facility, most of these places are private organizations. It's just to carry out the majority of medical functions that they do, in this case eye surgery, you have to have a license from the Department of Human Services.
It's not clear to me what you're saying the department should have done that it didn't do in terms of due process.
Your Honor, I do apologize, but I'm 80% gone in my left ear. My hearing aid died right before court, and that's why
sorry.
I keep turning this way. So,
can you kind of restate your argument? It's not clear to me what you're saying that the Department of Health should have done in terms of due process at the earlier stage.
Your Honor, when there was an order for an indefinite continuance until the criminal matter is resolved, I think it should have been picked up at that point and remained at least reviewed by the administrative law judge. Forgetting his honor's name. Your Honor, Judge Stephen C. Moon, who I'm not even sure is still with the Department of Human Services, but I think that should have begun there. And that, you know, that the other thing is that respondent in addressing this issue on page 5 calls this a quasi-judicial decision. I think that the paragraph that she cites on page 5 kind of outlines why this is an administrative thing and not a quasi-judicial procedure, because in the paragraph she cites Anderson versus Commissioner of Health, it states that on appeal from a quasi judicial agency decision is not subject to Administrative Procedures Act, and it goes on to say, we examine the record to review, quote, questions affecting the jurisdiction of the agency, the regularity of its proceedings, and as to the merits of the controversy, whether the order or determination in a particular case was arbitrary, oppressive, unreasonable, fraudulent, under an erroneous theory of law, or without evidence to support it. Do note that they're saying, well, but none of those considerations are even to be considered either. The question is only whether the conviction occurred, and whether she can be disqualified on that. They're not allowed to consider whether she's a risk to public safety. They're not allowed to consider, whether the particular case was arbitrary, oppressive, or unreasonable. And so it would seem to me that it is, in fact, something protected by the Administrative Procedure Act, that it's
so
not a
quasi. Is your due process argument limited to the fact that she wasn't given a hearing before an administrative law judge?
That's at least a good part of my argument, yes. And because there was a hearing, and then he indefinitely continued that for the resolution of criminal proceedings to be resurrected after that, and it never occurred.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank
That's
you, Mr.
My time.
Martin. Thank you, counsel. The court will take this matter under advisement at this time then, and we'll have a decision for you within 90 days.
Right. Thank you. Thank you very much, Your Honor. Appreciate it.